Jaffe speaking. I live at 6370 Via Tierra.
On there?
We're on. We're working.
Okay. Jaffe, let me ask you about your family.
Well, yes, I was born in Butler, Pennsylvania on May 7th, 1921. And I was the middle of six children. I have four brothers and a sister. And my name, incidentally, I was named for a non-Jew. My doctor, who brought me into this world, his name was Dr. Arthur Heilman, H-E-I-L-M-A-N. And he's a very close friend of my father's. My father said, "You don't have anybody named after you. And if the next one's a boy, he's yours." I was the next one. I never knew Dr. Heilman. He died before I could remember anybody. And there was, I had a stepbrother, so to speak, because he did have a son, and his name was John. So I always claimed John as another brother.
That's
right, exactly. John Heilman. My mother died when I was 12. And my father remarried when I was in college at Penn State, as a matter of fact. So I always recall, I was 12 and a half actually, my mother died, and she was 36 or 37. She had six children, and I always recall that I thought she was old.
I hear the same.
Yes.
I think everybody.
And of course, when my own wife was 36, I realized how young my mother was when she died. So actually, what happened then was I was the oldest at home. My older brother, Sidney, was in college at Penn State already, and my sister was at Goucher. So I had the responsibility for 4 or 5 years or so for my younger brothers, my three younger brothers. My youngest brother was 6 or 7 months old when my mother died. And my father, as I said, did not remarry, but was a very young man. He was 40 when my mother died. And she had been very young when they got married. She was 16 and he was 20 when they were married. She had her first child before she was 17. That's the way it was in those days, I guess.
Were they both from Butler?
No, my mother was from Baltimore, and my father was from Baltimore.
And that's why your sister went to Goucher.
And that's why my sister went to Goucher.
Would you run down this for me? Your brother is Sidney, and your sister is?
Beulah.
And your younger brothers?
And my younger brothers are my brother Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, and my brother Norman, and my brother Richard. Six of us.
Mm-hmm. How did they come to Butler?
Interesting story. When my father married my mother, he went out in the world to seek his fortune. In those days, none of them had graduated high school, as you recognize. Although they were extremely well-educated people, they had not graduated high school. They were married, and my father had gone into making buttons in New York. Went to New York City. My mother stayed in Baltimore. He went by himself. And the button factory burned down within 6 months, and he was broke. So he then went out to West Virginia, which in those days was the wilds, to work in the oil fields. My mother still remaining in Butler, in Baltimore, sorry. As a matter of fact, when my father died, we went through all his belongings, and there was a packet, a very thick packet of postal cards that my mother had written to my father from Baltimore while he was living in West Virginia. And they were magnificent postcards. They were in a series. They were just beautifully done. And she wrote every day, "My dear husband." And she signed it so formally, "Your loving wife." It was him. And so he went to West Virginia to work in the oil fields and in Wick, West Virginia. And
Wick
still there.
Wick
is in the mountains. We went to visit Wick many years later.
Is it near Beckley?
It's, yes. It's closer to places like Salem, West Virginia, or it's down near below Marietta, Ohio. In that
That's
area.
An unusual thing for a Jewish man to do.
Right. Went to way to work in the oil fields. It was jobs. It was booming then. And he worked in the oil fields for a while, and he fell off.
Approximately.
Born. Oh, he's 19. No, no, no. Yes, probably be that. Be about that. Being around 1917,
before
I would
the
say.
War,
mm-hmm. Because my sister was born in Salem, West Virginia, and oh yes, before the war. Before the war, and he was working on a rig and fell off of a rig and injured himself, broke a leg, and so he couldn't work. So he set up somewhere into business, selling supplies to the oil men who were working in the fields, and he set up in a barn. The barn's still there, selling. And eventually he went from there to Salem, West Virginia. And then my mother joined him. She did not live with him in Wick. He had to, she joined him in Salem, West Virginia, where he went into business, retail business, with a Gentile, a partner. Matter of fact, I can never visualize my father on a horse, but I have a picture of him where they're in front of the store, general store in Salem, West Virginia, the two owners on horses. Obviously, they didn't have cars. I just never thought of it that way.
They had high stirrups, though.
That's right. And so he went into business with this gentleman, and unfortunately, he got scarlet fever and almost died. And when he got finished with the scarlet fever, which took a number of months, we're talking probably 4 to 6 months before he was well again, the business was broke. Now, by this time, he already had a child, my sister, and his wife, his young wife, and he had to support him. And he got a job to manage a credit clothing store. In those days, there was a company called Credit Clothing or something of that sort. People's. It was called the People's Credit Store. And that got that job in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. And he had the job in Newcastle. And he was fired from the job, although the company was Jewish-owned, he was fired from the job because he would not work on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. That store was open. So he lost the job, and he's still very, very young at this point. You know, we're all talking maybe a year or so after he's married. All this took place within a couple years or so.
Yes, I'm amazed that you know so much of his story.
Well, we went back to Wick, West Virginia with him once, just, yes. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, he went back to Wick, West Virginia. He hadn't been there in, I don't know, how many years at that time, 50 years or 40 years or whatever it was. And he pointed out, he says, "Now that's the house where I roomed." Now, this time the community had shrunk. It wouldn't have been a boom town now. It was just a dozen houses and so forth. And he says, that's the barn where I had my store. So he said, well, let's go up to that house and let's just see if who's living there now. I'd like to be here. He goes and knocks on the door, saying people are living there. And the woman at the door recognized my father immediately. And, you know, they greeted one another, and she yells up to her husband, whoever, whatever his name was, Hiram or something like that. She said, you'll never guess who's here. He said, I know who is here. Who's here? It's Max Jaffe. I recognized his voice. You know, it was his distinctive voice. So he hadn't seen these people all those years. And then they started reminiscing about, well, whatever happened to, you know, Joe? Well, he was shot for that fight at the bar, that sort of thing. It was really an interesting time. I didn't believe these stories, you know, how people exaggerate as time goes on. But that was true. Fanny Posner. She was a very beautiful woman. I remember very, very well. Very stunning looking woman.
Did they ever take you back to Baltimore?
Oh, yes. Well, we still have family. I was married in Baltimore the first time. Mm-hmm. My first marriage, yes. We still have family there. Cousins. You know.
How did you get to Butler?
Oh, okay. Well,
Newcastle.
Yeah, he got fired, and there was a family that living there who were in business by the name of Rosenblum. You know Joel?
I know Martin.
You know, Joel's from Butler. He has a brother. His brother's wife is a novelist, Faye.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Well, he had two stores, this Mr. Rosenblum, for an older man. He had a store in Newcastle, women's shop. Women, they were a little more general than that in those days. And another one in Butler. And he offered my father a job as janitor in the Butler store. And that's how my father got to Butler. My father was janitor. Do you remember my father at all? Real dynamic kind of guy, real dynamite. And if you ever met my father, you knew that he would not be janitor for very long.
Right, he would not.
And it was true. Within 2 months, he was manager of the store for Mr. Rosenblum, and then he went into business for himself with another partner, a fellow named Orem, Mr. Orem. And Orem and Jaffe, that was the name of their company.
And that was a general store.
Yep. Doing women's soft clothing, you know, women's, men's.
It'd be like a small department store.
Yeah, and he then, eventually during the 20s, Mr. Orem, they made a lot of money, and Mr. Orem invested in land in Florida and lost everything that he had in those days. But my father had bought out the business from him, said, look, you know, and Mr. Orem said, I'm going to move. Was it. And that's how my father got established in Butler.
And you children were all of them raised in Butler?
All of us were reared in Butler.
Mm-hmm.
All born there, excepting my sister, who was born in Salem.
What was it like living in a small town as one of the minority? Obviously one of the minority.
I've often said to friends in Pittsburgh, you were born in a small town.
Certainly was. Children
were, yeah, Butler's even smaller, had a smaller Jewish community than Sharon. I always said to my friends in Pittsburgh, you don't know what it is to be Jewish. You grew up in Squirrel Hill, you went to Taylor Alderdice, and you never were exposed to being Jewish in a society that is not Jewish. You really don't understand anti-Semitism. You don't understand what it is to be singled out. My graduating class in high school, I was the only Jew in 276 in the graduating class. And I don't know what it was like to be like. I would say that it was good and bad. I had most of my friends. I lived in Butler the first 57 years of my life. most of my friends, most of my life, were non-Jews. So I had friends. That's the point I'm making. I have lifelong friends who have stood the test of being friends of a Jew through thick and thin.
It has to be difficult in that
way. It is.
How did your family maintain their religion, or did they?
Oh, yes. My father came from an Orthodox background. My father was a man who believed in ritual, and we were very observant ritual. We were not, while my mother was alive, I would call ourselves, we had a kosher home, and we had a very Jewish home. When my mother died, the kosher part broke down because there was nobody to, Well, yes and no. In the early years of Butler, there was a kosher butcher shop.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And one of the experiences of as a child was going down there and watch them slaughter the chickens in the kosher fashion. And, you know, they picked them. When my mother went to get a chicken, she did not pick a dead chicken. She went down there and she would point to that live chicken and say, "That's the one I want." And then he would kill, slaughter the chicken and drain the blood. And then you took it home and they salted it and did all the process. That, you know, we're talking about a period of time that everything was so different. When they made chicken soup, they didn't have pressure cookers, and you didn't, you know, you started from scratch, and it took all day to make the chicken soup in a big pot for six children and a husband and so on. It was, cooking was
a full-time occupation.
And shopping for kosher meat was an adventure. And of course, anything like the delicacies, like the halva and the tongue and corned beef, that you had to get to Pittsburgh. And so there, what people did was we would go to Pittsburgh once a week or once every 2 weeks, and that was an adventure, and go down to the Fifth Avenue or wherever and buy our meats and bring them back. And we didn't have an electric, you know, when I first remember, there was no electric refrigerator. With the Iceman came around, and outside you had on your door the sign, 50 pounds or 25 pounds, and it came in. And so it was really a big process just to keep kosher and bring these meats from Pittsburgh and store them. And it was an adventure.
Did they have enough Jewish people in Butler to have a religious school?
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, there was a time when, while there weren't a lot of families, the families were big. I mean, six children, and our family was not an enormous family, because there were Jewish families there with 8 and 10. So, while we eventually had more families and less children. In those days, we had less families and more children. So, yeah, we had, you know, we probably had a Hebrew school. And then everybody went. It wasn't kind of like it became later optional. You know, if you were Jewish and there was a Hebrew school, you went, whether you liked it, didn't like it. Football and piano lessons and all the rest of it didn't really, that was secondary. You went to the Hebrew school first, and then you had to find time for the football and the piano lessons and all the rest of it later.
Did you have a rabbi at that time?
Well, we had a synagogue. We had a synagogue that was, they had a congregation and a synagogue. The congregation was established very early, like 1900. They had a congregation when there were enough Jews. There were Jews in Butler going back. Some of those families became assimilated later, going back to 1850, in that period of time. There were individual Jews who lived there but did not live a Jewish life, or eventually were assimilated, intermarried, and so on. the real Jewish community started about 1900, 1900, 1902. So by the time my father got to Butler, there was a full-fledged congregation. There was never an ordained rabbi. There were men who were called rabbis or teachers, but there was not an ordained rabbi until, not until after the Second World War. Yes. My father liked Butler. We liked Butler. We liked the small town. There, any of us who grew up in a small town, the intimacy is wonderful. There's times that you'd like to have some anonymity, but that doesn't happen in a small town. Our neighbors were all Gentile. The closest Jewish family was a block and a half away.
Well, and when it was Hanukkah, you've been the only ones that had Hanukkah.
Everybody
else had
Christmas. Everybody.
Did you feel deprived?
No, I always felt like one of my friends always said, I always felt good about it. I knew there wasn't a Santa Claus. I knew something they didn't know. There's a sort of sense of superiority in knowing something that somebody else doesn't know.
Didn't you run over to see their Christmas tree and their presents, and they ran?
We did. We did go over, and we did see, and
they were still your good friends.
They were still your good friends. That's right. But we always had to hold our tongues because they believed in Santa Claus, and we just had to let them believe it. We couldn't be nasty and destroy their image, you know. We had to be nice people.
May I ask us here about culture in your home? You say your parents did not finish high school.
Mm-hmm.
You say that they were well educated.
Very. Well, first of all, my father was had attended a Hebrew school, an advanced Hebrew school, in all his life, and his father was a Hebrew teacher. So he knew the Talmud and Gemara and Rashi and all those things as well as most rabbis would know it, perhaps better than he could. He was the equal of almost any rabbi in his ability to hold discussions with them upon the fine details of these commentaries of all sorts. So that is a very sophisticated education, and he educated himself. He's an omnivorous reader. He read constantly. You had to grab his attention. You had to almost shake him to, say, "I'm here, Dad. Just let the book down for a minute." He read everything, and read until his eyesight gave out on him. And that was a tragedy of his life in the last few years, when he couldn't do what he liked to do best, which was to read. My mother did probably went to school until she got married, so she probably went through some. Look, I worked at Carnegie Institute, and I got to know a lot about Andrew Carnegie. Andrew Carnegie never went beyond the fifth grade. If you read Andrew Carnegie's letters, all kinds of letters, personal business letters, you would be hard pressed to find a Harvard graduate who could do any better. Their level of education
Did your father, force this upon the children, or did they just gravitate?
He insisted. He often said that the highest Jewish value is education. He said, they call a man who's got money but has no education, he's an am ha'aretz, he's a peasant. That was his favorite phrase. And education was stressed in our household, and to the point where my sister was second in her graduating class. I mean, if we didn't graduate close to the top of our class, it was a tragedy in our family, and we all did. I don't think any of us who weren't in the first, ranked in the first 10 in the class.
Obviously, you're a very bright family.
Yes.
And you come by it honestly.
Yeah. And my father and my mother put a tremendous value on education.
So that your, they were really your main influence.
They were.
In the direction that your life has gone, rather than your Sunday school teachers or your classroom teachers.
Just one other person in my life was a great influence, and that was the our so-called rabbi in Butler. When my mother died, there was a rabbi in that community whom I admired, and I was a great student of his, and he became kind of a surrogate parent for me, and as a result of that, I became very deeply involved. As you know, I became a chazan. He had a lot of training in his own right as a cantor, and I had a good voice. I did a lot of singing all my life, and so he trained me to be a chazan, which stood me in good stead for a big part of my life.
How did you explain that to your friends?
Being a chazan. Mm-hmm. Well, I enjoyed it. I like singing.
And
I sang
didn't think
and I sang.
You were peculiar.
Oh. No. I don't think so. Mm-mm.
They probably wouldn't even have any understanding of what you were doing.
You mean?
You were going to Hebrew school.
Yeah, I went to Hebrew school every day. You know, you went after school every day. You walked to Hebrew school. There were no cars nobody took me. Nobody picked me up. I walked, took probably 25 minutes to walk there. Oh, you went to school, to public school. You know, you lived in the city, and you walked to public school, and there were no cafeteria for lunchtime, so you came back for lunch, and then you went back when they rang the bell to go back to school for the 1 o'clock, and you got out at 4 o'clock, and you went from school with your Hebrew books. You walked to the Hebrew school at the other side of the city, which took 25 minutes or so. You went to Hebrew school for an hour and a half, and
did
then
you
walked back home, and then you had your dinner.
Did you think all this was fun, or did you do something for fun?
I sometimes wonder if I was ever young. I meant that seriously when I said that earlier. In my own particular case, because I think, I think if my mother had lived and I had not been the oldest at home, I think it would have been totally different. But first of all, my mother was sick a great deal of her life. I never really knew her to be ever really well. And so the way the family was structured is each older child took care of whoever was down the road. You know, what that meant was you helped, they got to bed, they got their breakfast, and you took them, they walked to school with you because they weren't old enough to walk by themselves. You helped them with their lessons. I mean, that was part of being part of a large family where a mother wasn't all that strong and well. And so you just were, you know, you're just always responsible. So you were never really carefree. I don't really remember ever being carefree, ever, in my life.
Did they have any discipline problems with you, little angels?
No. I wasn't a discipline problem. My brother, Sidney, was strong-willed, and he and my mother were two very strong-willed people, and they didn't get along. My brother tried to burn down in fighting my mother one day. He tried to burn down the house.
Really?
Yeah, really. Yeah. I mean, it was. But beyond that, no. We were a disciplined family, and I would say essentially, by today's standards, trouble-free.
May
from
I just
that point
stop
of view.
You now? This is a good place to stop and take. Sure.
said went. No questions asked.
That's right.
That's not all bad.
That's exactly right. I mean, there was no, we assure your children argue, say, I don't want to do this, and so I'm sure. But in the bottom line was you did. You did, right. As a matter of fact, we never sat down to eat until my dad sat down to eat, and he came home from work and he rested before he ate. So that's the way that family was run.